Now, to just begin with, who is Sayyid Nursi, and just a bit, you know, his biography. He was born in 1876 and died in 1960, and he has passed his life in a very dynamic part of the history, in a land where multi-religious practices continued with no problem until the First World War. Nursi, at the turn of the 20th century, played active role in the socio-political life and had his educational project submitted to the ruler of the time, Sultan Abdul Hamid II. Actually, at the turn of century, the position of political situation of Turkey looked like more or less, you know, these Middle Eastern countries. And Nursi went to Sultan Abdul Hamid II. He said that you have to bring freedom. And he supported the second constitutionalism. We call it meşrutiyet, ikinci meşrutiyet. He supported. Although those who were asking for the constitutionalism, they were not, you know, say, good practicing Muslims. But because of the freedom, he supported. And he says, Sultan Abdul Hamid, that eventually the regime will change. He said, eski hal muhal, ya yeni al, ya izmihlal. He said that to continue like this is impossible. Either we will have new regime or we will die away. This was in 1907. And as you know, Sultan Abdul Hamid lost his post in 1909. And later on, he was assassinated. Later on, during the First World War, took part in the war, wounded and taken as prisoner of war, exiled to Kostroma, a city in the central Siberia, 500 kilometers north of Moscow. After 2 years of exile, he escaped and took part in the independence struggle of the country. When he arrived in Istanbul, Istanbul was under the occupation of British forces. But just after establishment of modern Turkish Republic, he was then exiled by the Republican leaders in 1926. This then became his lifelong exile till he died in 1960. Just a bit anecdote, of 4 months after his death, his grave was destroyed and his body was taken away to an unknown destination. Today we do not know where is his grave, by the military forces. With his tireless efforts and works, the most popular and widespread Muslim community emerged, faith-based, peaceful religious community, the Nur community. His life and writings in many ways is very rich with examples to take in many different levels for multicultural and multi-religious societies. Today, actually, the world is a country. Before we had, you know, many different countries, but today we have no borders anywhere. There is, you know, symbolic borders, but if you turn on TVs and things, you know, internet, everywhere is, you know, same single country. And with playing with the machines, you know, players can transfer millions or billions of billions of dollars from Japan to United States, from United States to South Africa to Russia, and, you know, make a lot of, you know, turbulence everywhere in the world, economic crisis, etc. By studying exemplary cases from his life, we will see how faithful person becomes center of diffusion for forgiveness and peace by sacrificing his feelings. When we study his 6,000 handwritten commentary on Quran, because that time he was forbidden to use, you know, machine and etc. A commentary on Quran is concerned the following two important things. Number one, his depth on faith matters and grounded spirituality, and number two, his commitment to peace and forgiveness. Mercy on faith. As he describes at several occasions in the Risale-i-Nur, his Quranic commentary, that the awesome disease of this time is the spiritual sickness that emerges from atheistic materialism. In his writings, he has employed very strong reasoning to prove the basics of the faith. As such, the realities and the truth of unity and the existence of God, the proof of life after death, the truth of prophethood, the truth of the spirit and the angel, the role of moral values in human endeavor and justice. Several levels of justice, because he employs the names and the attributes of God being all just, that there is absolute justice manifested in the universe in different levels. His approach of proving the truth of faith is based on the names and the attributes of God manifested in the universe. Thus, he ingeniously transforms the universe into a vast book, helping us to see, to understand, and to read the beautiful names of God. Then the universe becomes a book of creation to help us to read the revealed books, like Quran, Bible, etc. I do sincerely believe, and it is the testimony of international scholarship, that his approach and the examples that he employed in discussing and proving the truth of faith and religion can be very helpful and instrumental for the followers of other traditions. His vision about the universe, the human life, for him, the world, the life, has three faces. One, the world is a playground. Some people may take it as playground, like, you know, playground of children. And then second phase is the land to be cultivated for the next life. You use it in order to gain your next life. And then the third, manifestations of the names and the attributes of God. The key concepts to journey towards God are to become a good servant. Nursi says that we have four important faculties within us. Number one is importance. We have to render it. We have to use our importance because we are weak, okay? And the second one is poverty. We are poor, you know. For example, we are in need of oxygen. If there is no oxygen, we can't do anything. Okay? We need everything. Our heart is beating each day over 80,000 times. 80,000 times every day. And it continues, for example, if we live 80 years. And our liver is functioning without our knowledge. If we fear of something, our heart starts beating fast. Why? Because liver is pumping adrenaline. Imagine now, most, you know, clever and educated professor of medicine, if he has to live on himself, he cannot, you know, continue his life maybe for one day. So we are poor. And then the third one, compassion. God has shown in many different folds his compassion in the universe. We have to read it correctly. And then reflective thought. By reflective thought, if we can use it, then we can get importance, poverty, and compassion understood in its, their real manners. He has written in his Risale-i-Nur collection extensively on prayers, on resurrection, on justice, on youth, on women, on elderly, on sick, and etc. Maybe I can count more than 50 different subjects. For example, to lead an economic life, microeconomy. Himself, he did that, you know.
He used to drink the soup, you know, water side of the soup himself, and giving the grains to the aunts. And they were asking his students, why are you doing so? He was saying that these aunts are Republican, all of them are working. So I give the grains to them. I appreciate, you know, their being Republic. Imagine, you see. And of course, his serious concern of world peace and forgiveness, which we will see some examples now. I would like to quote exemplary passages from his writings first, then the discussion will follow. Now, case by case. Case one. During the First World War, he saved the life of several hundred Armenian women and children, even in the worst case of First World War conditions. This is recorded in many, you know, archive documents. That he, in the war, during the fighting, we will see, you know, the consequences of that war later on, perhaps. And he found that women and children are in danger, and he left fighting, and then he went, and then he saved them, and until he found, you know, the Armenian men in order to hand them over to them. Case two, a letter from Nursi to his student during the years of Second World War, at time he was in the Denizli prison. He was imprisoned in Turkey that time. Imagine 1939-1945. So he was prisoned 1943 till 44. Nursi wrote this letter to his students. It is a bit long letter, but I would like to read it because it's very important to understand Nursi's grounded theology and spirituality. In his name he be glorified, and there is nothing but it glorifies him with praise. Because of my intense compassion and pity, I was touched strongly by the afflictions, poverty and hunger visited on unfortunate as a result of mankind's disaster, and this winter's cold, as well as by harsh, non-physical, spiritual cold. Suddenly, a warning came to me that there was a sort of mercifulness and reward in such disasters, even for unbelievers. So someone asking, Ian was asking a question. So he says, even for unbelievers. If there is a disaster, there is a reward for them. This is his judgment. So that the disaster became insignificant in relation to them. Heavenly visitations, such as those are like a sort of martyrdom for innocent people. While for 3 or 4 months I had no news of the war, Second World War, and the world situation, I felt to pitying the families and the children in Russia and Europe. Then I recall the warning. The aspects of the calamity that it elucidated became a cure for my painful compassion. It was as follows. So he said that in Russia, it became a sort of martyrdom for innocent people. Here, innocent doesn't mean that they don't have sin towards God. They don't have sin in the war, okay? So in that respect, they are innocent. It means that they didn't contributed to the Second World War. So he categorizes for the children. If those who died and were ruined by the heavenly visitations, which occurred due to the crimes of tyrants, were 15 years of age or less, they were martyrs of a sort of whatever religion they belong to. Like Muslims, their great spiritual reward reduces the calamity to nothing. over 15 years. If those who were 15 and older were innocent and oppressed, their reward is great. Indeed, it will save them from hellfire. The old and the afflicted, the old and the afflicted, and the poor and the weak in particular, suffer diversity under the violent force of mighty, despotic tyrants, but for sure, together with atoning for sins arising from the vices of civilization, ingratitude, and the misguidance of philosophy and unbelief, it is a hundredfold profit for them. I was informed thus by truth and reality, and I offered endless thanks to the most merciful of the merciful, and found consolation for that grievous pain and compassion. The oppressors. If those who suffered the calamity were oppressors and the tyrants who brought about mankind's distress and the self-seeking, dastardly human satans who set fire to the world of humanity for their own benefits, they were entirely deserving of it, and it was pure divine justice for them. People who aided oppressors, like, for example, Red Cross, Red Crescent, you know, helping them. If those who suffered the calamity were people who hastened to assist the oppressed, who strove for the ease of humanity and struggled to preserve the principles of religion and sacred revealed truth and human rights, most certainly the spiritual and immaterial results of self-sacrifice and those pertaining to the hereafter are so great that they make the calamity a means of honor and distinction for them and should make them love it. So here is the end of quote. There were a number of reasons for a person like Nursi not to write this letter, as one should expect. Nursi is a Muslim scholar, and the Russian and the rest of Europe involved in Second World War are Christian in majority orthodoxy. For example, one could say maybe none of Muslim harmed during that Second World War. If Nursi were looking in the angle of, you know, that, you know, Muslims or, you know, spiritually related people are being harmed. No. Historically speaking, there is a long, deep hostility between Europe, Russia, and Ottoman, later modern Turkey. Nursi was taken as prisoner of war between 1916 and 1918 with a broken leg and for more than 2 years in central Siberia by Russians. But he didn't have a little amount of hatred in that sense towards Russian people. Okay, so he wrote this letter. In this case, Nursi's approach is not due to simple humanitarian thinking. It is due to rather deep concern related to creation of the universe and humanity. Case 3. In his writings in several different places, he states that Muslims and pious followers of the book should unite their forces to resist against the atheistic materialism in order to save the generations. Nursi doesn't say dialogue, because dialogue, Christian-Muslim dialogue, interfaith dialogue, it is a kind of ceasefire, you know. You don't, you know, curse us, we don't curse you. Nursi says cooperation. He used exactly this word, you know. Unite your forces. In another place, he says, O Nur students and the Christian missionaries, he says, you know, Christian missionaries, to leave aside the differences that exist and unite your forces against the atheistic materialism, to save sacred and gain high moral values, to find solutions for existing social injustice. Case 4. Once he was looking out of the window of Afyon prison, this is in 1948, There were a number of children playing in the garden of the prison. He asked, "Whose are those children?" When he heard that one of them is the child of the Afyon court prosecutor, then he said, "I was going to curse him. Now, because of this child, I forgive him." Case 5. And this prosecutor actually was asking death penalty for Nursi for doing nothing. But he was being, you know, charged with death penalty. Case 5. He visited Patriarch Athanagoras of Eastern Orthodox Church in Istanbul in 1953 and asked to cooperate in order to unite their forces in saving the generations from the atheistic materialism. And even today, for a religious leader, it is a matter, you know, to go and visit Arkpatria of Eastern, you know, Bartholomew. But he went in 1953. I don't know how much you know, in 1950s, the atmosphere was very tense. In 1955 or 56, perhaps you know better than I do, Tom. 1955, isn't it? There has been, you know, a lot of, you know, riots and things. They have destroyed all, you know, Orthodox people's, you know, churches, shops and things. Several hundred people were killed, you know. But he went there to show that in order to ease the tension. But of, unfortunately, he couldn't, you see. Case 6, he sends a book of him along with a letter to Pope in Vatican asking possibility of cooperation and uniting forces against atheistic materialism in 1950. And he received a letter of thanks from the Vatican in February 1951. There are several this kind of examples in his life and writings. With the careful observations of Nursi's life and his writings, the Risale-i Nur, one can gather the following points for the basis of his thought and action. The Quranic principle of a verse in Quran clearly states that one cannot be punished because of his father, mother, children, relative or nationalities or religious followers, sin. Okay. No one can do that. So he, Nursi, referred this verse 40 times in his writings. I believe that this verse today is being violated more than ever in the history. Okay. That someone are being killed, for example, now, because of Gaddafi's fault, several civilians will get killed, you know. How it happened in Iraq, in Aswa, in Palestine, you know, both way. Sometimes individuals are doing this, you know, terror and violence. Sometimes states are doing. It doesn't make, you know, any change if you are a state or if you are an individual. So this is very important. And here's an example, very... it is very easy and shocking to keep in mind. He says that in both, if there are 9 guilty, 1 innocent, that boat cannot be sunk by any justification. 9 guilty, 1 innocent person. So he applies this for a person. For example, if I have 9 sins and 1 good aspect, so I cannot be killed. I cannot be punished, he says. But imagine what we are doing today. We are doing, if 99 innocent person, 1 guilty on a boat, we sink that boat. Yeah. And in his writings, actually, Bilal reflected on it in Impotence, Poverty, Compassion, and Reflective Self. I skipped that one. He says that our biggest enemy is ignorance. and its byproduct, he says, poverty and conflict. We have to fight that enemy, ignorance. So for Nursi, nations, followers of other religions, tribes, whatever it is, they are not sitting on the chair of enemy or enmity. Ignorance is sitting there. So ignorance of multi-different, you know, kinds. For example, today we are here, we know each other. Actually, we are fighting ignorance, you know, to get rid of ignorance between us. So if ignorance disappears, then unity will be there. If ignorance is there, then disunity and conflict will be there. For Nursi, in his whole writings, the concept of this world being a guest house, and we are guests. So imagine if you are a guest in a house, guest house, you are not involved in material things very much. You sit, you want a comfortable chair, okay, to have, you know, some food and things. But you never, you know, connect your heart to the things that in that room or in that house. Like hotel, you see. You stay today, but you leave tomorrow. So similarly, the world is, for Nursi, a guest house. Nursi, in his writings, ingeniously creates an understanding that we feel that we are relatives of everything, even a stone. Atoms, animals, all kind of creatures in the universe are our relatives, being the creatures of the same creator. He sees all creatures as his relative due to being created by the same God. 8 years after the First World War, when he returns to Van, his hometown, this is my final thing, actually point that I would like to clarify here. He, in 1923, he saw that everything is destroyed. Houses, buildings, his madrasa before the war where he was teaching, because he has been taken as prisoner of war in 1916 and he returns back in 1923. So imagine now yourself, if you go to your homeland, hometown, that everything is, you know, either burned or destroyed. This is his writing from Flashes book. He says that 10 years later, I still weep when I imagine that situation in the same way that it made me weep at that time. Yes, the ruins of the houses at the foot of the ancient citadel, thousands of years old, and the town aging 8 years in 800 years, and the death of my madrasa, which had flourished and been the gathering place of friends, all indicates the vastness of the immaterial corpse of all the madrasas in Ottoman Empire, which had died. The great monolith of Van's citadel had become a gravestone to all of them. I was as though my students, who had been together with me in the madrasa 8 years previously, were weeping in their graves together with me. Indeed, the ruined walls of the town and its scattered stones were weeping together with me. I saw them to be weeping. So he recites a verse from Quran. It is like this: whatever is in the heavens and on earth, let it declare the praises and glory of God, for he is exalted in might, the wise. This verse saved me from that pitiful, terrible, sad separation, stained imagining, and opened my eyes. I saw that the fruits at the tops of the fruit trees were looking at me as though smiling. So he suddenly sees a tree having fruits on top of it. And he heard from those fruits saying, not us as well. They were saying, do not only look at the ruins. The verse's reality brought to the following thought to my mind. Who does an artificial letter, why does an artificial letter written in the form of a town by the hand of man, who is a guest on the page of one's plane, being whipped out by a calamitous torrent called the Russian invasion, sadden you to this extent? Consider the pre-eternal inscriber, everything's true owner and sustainer, for his missiveness on this page of one continue to be written in glittering fashion, in the way you used to see. Your weeping over those desolate ruins rises from the error of forgetting their true owners, not thinking that men are guests and imagining them to be the owner of everything on earth. So this is how Said Nursi is evaluating if most grievous things when he, come across. Thank you very much for listening.